Welcome to episode 435 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the Digital Media Zone. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we usually talk about Microsoft Entertainment Technology, audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. But this week, we are at CES in Las Vegas again this year.
And amazingly, neither of us are sick yet, despite the fact that we've been here for 5 days.
This is true, but I want to point out that while we're not sick, Josh, you're lying on a bed with your leg up and ice on it.
Probably worth pointing out, I suppose. Nothing too major, just a little bit of a flare-up of some tendonitis. Not a big deal. I just might be walking around in an air boot when I get home.
But again, a symptom of walking and really exerting yourself a lot. I mean, we've talked about that before. There's just people who haven't done the show just really can't understand the scope and magnitude and how much walking you do and how much you exhaust yourself while you're here, which is one of the reasons why people get sick.
Yep, all the time. And I think we're actually doing better this year. I think we're walking less than we have in the past because we're getting smarter about this, but it's still a ton. So let's get into everything that there is to talk about. First, we're going to start with some of the interesting display technology things that we saw. You can't talk about CES without talking about TVs and crazy TV related things that may or may not ever actually come to fruition, but definitely some cool things worth mentioning. Before we get into the real products, let's talk about some of the crazy things that we saw. I want to start with LG's insane entrance to their booth. And like, I feel kind of bad talking about it because it's something that we got to see and it's really cool. And none of our listeners will ever get to see it in person because this is just a one-time only thing. But I'm sure there are videos of it online and you should check this out. This was called LG's OLED Canyon. This was a walkway that they made that probably stretched 50 yards curving back and forth, and it was just lined with all of these curved OLED screens that were 30 feet tall.
Yeah, probably in total, you know, matrix together in sheets to make it look like a pseudo seamless wall of curved. And curved doesn't really do it justice because that already sets a negative connotation. It would be more accurate to call these screens wavy.
Yeah, that's a better way of describing it. I think they also kind of looked like tree trunks, like if you were walking through a tall forest of trees, but they were calling it a canyon, and some of the things that they displayed on it were, you know, canyon scenes with waterfalls rushing down them and stuff. And it was just spectacular. And the thing that is so great about it is that sort of thing isn't really doable with any technology other than OLED.
Right. And largely because of its pliability, because you can put it on a flexible substrate and end up with something that you can just form to any space. It was amazing. It was stunning. I think it's probably one of the best entryway demos we've seen. And that's one of the big things that companies like Samsung and LG and, you know, Microsoft used to do this too when they were here. They would kind of have these immersive entryways into their booths. And they just knocked it out of the park this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the best one I've ever seen, but I never got to see Microsoft's.
Well, now, were there other crazy things that you saw that you wanted to mention? Because I saw some real things, and this isn't even like someday it's going to come. It's like a real television, or I should say a real display of sorts.
Yeah, let's go to that one next.
So one of my favorite things, and I mentioned this after I had been at Cedia as well, was the Hisense laser projector. This is a short throw projector. Sony has a similar product that they've been showing for a couple of years, and it became real last year. Hisense's projector is, in my opinion, the best projection image I have ever seen from really any projector, let alone a short throw projector. And it does 4K. They provide you with the screen for it, and they have 80-inch and 100-inch versions. Today, I believe you can buy the 100-inch version. They're going to make an 80-inch version available, I think, in the first quarter of this year. And that is going to be available for under 10K, including the screen and the projector. I know it's a lot of money, but for a really high-end projector like that and really, you know, generally new laser technology using TI's DLP chips, it's really cool. I'm very happy with it. You didn't think the picture was as impressive as it should be, but everywhere else we're seeing OLEDs and all these crazy crisp images.
Right. So we actually had to go back and see this for a second time, because the first time we went down there, and you would really talk this up, and they were showing some footage that they got from FIFA showing some soccer games. And on this projector, it looked like they shot that footage with a miserable camera and then compressed the snot out of it. It looked terrible. You could see, you know, whenever the soccer ball would go flying across the screen, you could see major juddering. It was awful. And so we went back again, and they weren't showing that footage this time. They were showing their normal demo reel, and it did look a lot better. There were still some issues with motion, though. And I don't know if that's their demo reel, but it still wasn't buttery smooth.
I think it depended on the content. There was some content that was a little juddery, and I kind of attribute it to if you have to detelesign a video because your frames aren't matching up, then this looked like that hadn't been done properly. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that that's actually a projector problem, and I have not seen that problem before when I've seen this demoed. So I suspect that it's just certain scenes that they're showing there. But
yeah. Well, I mean, it was so amazing that it knocked the power out in the Las Vegas convention.
Oh, man. This, you know, if you've been following what's been going on at CES, you probably caught the hashtag CES blackout, which I think was yesterday's most popular hashtag. It was crazy. We're in the central hall of a major expo, and the lights just go out. And luckily, there are lots of cameras around. You know, media cameras with big lights on them that are battery operated. And so there was a sufficient amount of light to be able to see enough to walk around and get out of the building. Otherwise, you would have just been in the dark, because yeah, this is a big, huge warehousey building with no windows.
No, it was so dark. And it impacted everybody in different ways. I mean, it kind of wrecked our whole plan for the day for us, because we were planning to spend a whole bunch of time in that hall, and the power was out for two and a half, 3 hours. It's out for a while.
And it probably also, I mean, it might not have been out that long, but then there was also recovery time, because you imagine that every one of these booths has to reset everything. They have to reboot everything, get everything back into the right demo state. All of this has to happen before they can let people back on the show floor. So it was well into the afternoon before we got back in there. And you're right, it really messed up the day. But we did get to go back later again today and see more of the video stuff that they had. So you wanted to make sure that we checked out the wall at Samsung.
Yeah, how big was this? 150 inches?
Yeah, it was big. It was probably the biggest screen that we've ever seen. And this is designed with Samsung's new modular LED technology that allows them to basically matrix any number of LEDs in two dimensions to any size. It doesn't have to be square or rectangular. It can be any shape. And they just chose to demonstrate it on this massive space that essentially could have been a wall. I might argue it might have been cooler if, in fact, it was the full wall instead of windowed the way that it was, but still it shows you we're not that far from the, you know, the idea of a wall being a screen, certainly not in commercial spaces, and someday maybe in residential spaces.
Yeah, perhaps. Now, of course, the question with that type of setup is, could you see where the panels came together? And I couldn't. I tried as hard as I could. I couldn't. Part of that is due to the fact that they wouldn't let you get very close to it.
Well, I can also tell you that part of that is due to the fact that they can manufacture this to any spec without having seams, because they're just joining together as many LEDs as they need.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't separate panels. That's the thing that's unique about this.
Yeah.
And really amazing if you think about how you could use that sort of technology. I mean, you could technically canvas the entire side of a building if you wanted to.
Right. Right. Yeah. It looked really nice. It was still really bright, really crisp. It was very, very impressive. All right. Well, while we were at the LG booth, we looked at a couple of different types of displays, some really big, really thin ones, and some smaller ones that go on your desk. You wanted to talk about the LG W7.
Yeah, now I've talked about this before. I mentioned this when I had come back from Cedia. This is the wallpaper television that adheres to the wall, and it is about as thick as maybe two or three credit cards at the most. It is crazy, crazy thin and absolutely beautiful. This year, 2018, they're augmenting it with an update that they call AI. It is not AI. What they are doing is they are adding Google Assistant capabilities to it, and they are increasing the ability for you to be able to find content through the television and the services that they offer with universal search, some really good filtering, all kinds of metadata, and an algorithm that is going to that is going to recommend content for you. In the true sense of the word, this is not AI.
Right.
But it is cool. It just bugs me that this year was the year that everybody was saying, and we knew this was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
their product has AI, when in fact, most of them are not AI.
Now, this is probably the least accurate representation of AI that we saw.
Right.
And just to clarify, that new functionality with Google Assistant and all of the other things that you just talked about, that's not only coming to the W7. That's coming across the line. All of their webOS-enabled TVs are going to get that experience.
Well, but let's be clear. It's only on the newer products, right? It's not like this mm-hmm. is going to be available if you have last year's expensive W7 television.
Right.
This is coming to new versions. They are building new hardware in to include the Google Assistant capability. Mm-hmm.
And a new remote to use Google Assistant, use a microphone inside of the remote, and you have to hold a button down the whole time you're talking. It's like Breaker 1.9 Google Assistant.
And that's pretty common in remote design. I don't know why that is. I don't like it. I think it's problematic. I think family members have problems with that, but you know, that's how everyone does it for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the smaller side, LG had some new computer displays to show, including some HDR displays. We took a look at the ultra-fine display, 32 UK950. They even had the setup like it was specifically set up for me. It was running Forza Horizon 3 to show this off. It looked pretty, and it said it went to 600 nits of peak brightness. And when we got to look, it wasn't the greatest example. It was the car was driving out on the beach at night, and it wasn't facing towards any bright lights or anything, so it wasn't the greatest HDR thing to experience. But we weren't impressed with the blacks at all. No, everything just seemed crushed.
Yeah, it was. I thought the black levels were terrible. I was not impressed with that at all. What I did like was that some of those monitors that were 4K were just incredibly crisp. I don't have a 4K monitor. I know folks do, and it's becoming more and more common, but the 4K monitors I thought they were showing were just absolutely beautiful. And my favorite example was one where they had three 4K monitors on end standing next to each other, three wide.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you're looking at a huge screen that is more or less, for lack of a better thing to call it, 12K.
Right.
And that was really cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. All right, so let's get into the bigger topics, the more frequent things that we would talk about around here. So Plex, no, just kidding. Plex was here, but they weren't actually announcing anything at CES this week. So instead, we'll go to another common company that we cover here, and that would be Silicon Dust. Now, our longtime faithful listeners will remember way back in, I think it was 2015, we talked about how Silicon Dust was preparing to launch a 6-tuner version of their HD Home Run Prime. That, of course, is their cable car tuner. That didn't happen. There were a lot of reasons for that, including many, many issues with chip manufacturers where they'd get everything all lined up, and then the chip manufacturer would get acquired by another manufacturer, and they would kill the product line that Silicon Dust was planning to use. That crazy scenario actually happened twice. So they had lots of manufacturing issues along the way, but it looks like it's just about here. And as you might expect, there are some benefits to the delay. We've got a much smaller, better looking device than I think we probably would have gotten 3 years ago. But there's not really a lot else to say about it. It's a 6-tuner cable card tuner that this time, as it should, only requires one cable card.
One cable card and one cable connection. And then you're right, it's crazy small. We have a picture of it on our site that I took holding it so that you could get some idea of how big it is. And it's not big at all.
No, it is nice and tiny. And they're saying mid-year for $199 for this device. So the current 3-tuner Prime is, it's roughly $135. You know, sometimes that price fluctuates a little bit on Amazon, but it's about $135 for the current 3-tuner. You can expect that tuner will be going away. They're basically end-of-lifing that, and the HD Home Run Prime 6 will now be, you know, once it comes out, will be the only cable card tuner in their lineup. And that makes sense.
And I might just have to replace my original HD Home Run Prime if that happens.
Which I think, as we were digging through our previous post, did I say that came out in 2011? Holy cow, 7 years ago.
Right. So, I mean, I can't complain about the life that I've gotten out of the HD Home Run products. I mean, these boxes have lasted. Their weak point has been the power supplies, which they've replaced when they go bad.
Right.
Right. So yeah, I'm really excited to see this finally happening. We have every reason to believe that this is in fact finally happening. So I'm excited about it. It's not the only thing that they're coming out with though.
Nope. They've also got a new version of their HD Home Run Connect Duo. The Duo is their 2-tuner over-the-air device. This is the one that doesn't do transcoding. They want to add a couple more chips to it, throw some storage in it, and turn it into a standalone HD Home Run DVR box. Now, that requires some more clarification because I think most people would think, oh, so they're also adding an HDMI jack to it, and I'm just going to plug this one thing into my TV. No. It's still a back-end solution, but it's the whole back-end solution. The idea is lots of people are capable of getting an HD Home Run tuner, but having an always-running computer to serve as the DVR back-end, that's not a very 2018 sort of thing to do anymore, right? So with this, you can run the HD Home Run DVR backend directly on the tuner and then record directly on the tuner. And this is where things start to get a little less perfect. It's got onboard storage, but not a ton. It's only got 250 gigs of storage, which with my quick mental math, and this is Las Vegas mental math, so who knows? I think that's roughly 60-ish hours of HD recording. Which isn't, it's not great. Like, it's definitely not great. We're all of us who are building home theater PCs are putting far more storage in there.
Right. That's not hobbyist storage.
No.
That's general consumer storage, right? I mean, I think that that's probably enough for your average DVR consumer. But for the audience that this is going to appeal to, they're probably going to want more space for more shows. Mm-hmm. And there is a solution for that.
Yeah. So you can build a different HD Home Run DVR backend in the same way that you can right now. You know, maybe probably the most likely scenario is buy a NAS. Most modern NASs that you can pick up nowadays have enough power in them and the app to run the HD Home Run DVR software directly on the NAS, and then it would also just record directly to that NAS. And then I think a lot of people, especially our old Media Center fans, are wondering, well, when I build a new box to service my DVR backend, don't I lose all of my recording schedules and all that stuff? That Ted Head, the CEO of Silicon Dust, told us, nope, you won't lose anything. All of that stuff is basically stored in the cloud. So if you set up another HD Home Run DVR backend on a NAS or something like that, all of it's just going to seamlessly transfer over, and all of your recordings will just start recording on the NAS.
And the clients are going to be able to seamlessly blend those content sources together. So you may have storage on your NAS. You may have some content that's still on board on the device, and the clients are going to be able to just read that and make that work. Now, you are going to need to have their $35 a year subscription for the DVR service, which, by the way, somehow we missed, is production now. They're out of beta.
Yeah. I really don't understand how we missed that, but apparently it is out of beta. The price also slightly changed. I went back and looked at their Kickstarter. When they initially Kickstarted this, they said that the subscription would be $30 a month. $30 a year. Ooh, yeah. Not $30 a month. That would be crazy. I don't think it's a big deal. It's
$5.
Just, yeah, $5.
One less coffee.
Yeah, it's all coffee. It's not a big deal, but it is worth noting. One other thing. Well, actually, two other things. I don't think we said the name of this product. So it's just another version of the Kinect Duo. So they're calling this one the HD Home Run Kinect Duo Plus. Remember that plus. It's going to show up a lot over the next couple of products that we talk about here. But one more thing I wanted to mention. Because it's the HD Home Run DVR, if two over-the-air tuners isn't enough for you, you can keep stacking HD Home Run tuners onto this. You know, like Richard does over-the-air and cable card. So you could get the HD Home Run Kinect Duo Plus, get your two over-the-air tuners, and get one of these new HD Home Run Prime 6s and have six more cable tuners. And now you're recording eight things at once. Yeah, now you definitely need more than 250 gigs of storage.
Yeah, absolutely. But the other thing to remember is that if you have one of these Prime boxes, then in all likelihood, you're also going to be recording protected content. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, we've all talked about many times is, well, what about playback of protected content? Because you can record all the protected content that you want, you just might not be able to actually play it back depending on the platform. And so Silicon Dust is working to try and get platform compatibility for protected content playback on as many platforms as possible. They're going for the big ones, but they're starting with, not surprisingly, the Windows platforms, and we've talked about that before. That's one of the ways that you can now watch live protected television is through Windows or through the Xbox.
Yeah, that's really nice. And so that the playback of live protected content still works. The playback of recorded protected content will launch first on Xbox and Windows PCs, and it'll launch at the same time as HD Home Run Prime 6, and then they'll move on to try to get it working on other platforms like Android and iOS and Roku and things like that.
All right, you teased us with some pluses.
Yep, we've got a couple more pluses. Both of these coming from Channel Master. Channel Master is a company that we've talked about a lot over the last couple of years because of their over-the-air DVRs. They've been a pretty nice value. It's $250 for their box. You have to bring your own hard drive, and you get a grid guide. You didn't have, there was no subscription fee. So it was a pretty nice value in terms of an over-the-air DVR. They're launching a new one. It is called the Stream Plus. It is a much smaller device. It has two tuners built in, and it's running directly on Android TV, so they don't have to write all their own stuff. They don't even have to write their own grid and recording and all of that stuff, because as of the last major version, actually, it might have, I think it's actually going back to Android 7, Android TV 7, they included live TV and grid guide and all that stuff right into Android. So it's all there. They're just using the stuff that's built into Android. I've used some of the live TV stuff on Android TV through the NVIDIA Shield TV. It looks pretty nice. It's a nice traditional grid guide. If that's what you're looking for, I think you're going to like that. This box, the really, really amazing thing about it is the price. It is a $99 box.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's absolutely insane. Now, of course, the question is, what about storage? Their previous DVR required you to plug in an external hard drive via USB. They're not going that route this time. Well, they are, but it's not ready yet. So they've got a micro SD card slot built in. So that's what they're doing initially. You can just write to micro SD, and I'm sure that works fine, but you're definitely not going to get massive amounts of storage out of a micro SD card.
No.
So they do have a USB port on it. They said that it's not working absolutely perfectly just yet. It's working mostly. It will record, it will play back, but they said there are some bugs that they're still trying to work out. But this is available for pre-order right now, and they're expecting to start shipping pre-orders like at the end of this month, which is also kind of unheard of from CES.
Well, I would argue that it's not unheard of for people to say that they're shipping at the end of the month, but the reality is that it usually doesn't happen that fast. So Anytime I hear someone say end of the month, I buffer that to first quarter. I hear people say March, I buffer that to first half of the year. You know, you just have to be right. A little bit more pragmatic about this, because your marketing engine is in full force and you don't want people to lose the momentum of their excitement.
Yeah. Well, the other product with a plus in the title from Channel Master is called the Smartenna. It's, you know, smart antenna, but it's the Smartenna Plus. This is a flat antenna, like you're used to seeing, although this one's not quite as flat. It's got a pretty big bulge in the middle because it's actually got some processing guts in it and a little button. So the idea here is that when you go to use one of these flat antennas, you normally don't have a lot of options for where or how to mount them. You're going to mount them to your wall or to your window or something like that. And then once they're there, you can't really move them around much. And moving an antenna just tiny amounts can make a drastic difference in how good the reception turns out to be.
Right.
So what they've done is they've made it so that they can change the reception profile between seven different profiles all inside of this one antenna. And there's a button that you can push on it to switch between them. Now, switching between seven different profiles in one position and checking all of your channels sounds like a pain. And it's 2018. Our antennas and all of this gear should do a little bit of that work for us.
Yeah.
And so it does. When you hook this up and plug it in, you can put it into an automatic scan mode, and it's going to test all seven of those profiles for where you've put it and pick the best one that it thinks is going to work the best for you. Now, if you want to mess with it more and fine tune it, maybe you can still cycle through those, but pretty decent chance that it's going to be smart enough to figure out exactly what's going to work the best for your location.
My concern, I guess, is that the difference between reception of one station versus another oftentimes is influenced by the position or angle of the antenna in relation to the source. And so I would be concerned that, you know, you're still going to have the problem where some stations don't come in well, and maybe, just maybe, one profile might work better for another one station and another profile might work better for another. And geez, that reminds me a whole lot of the old like antenna spinner thing from when I was a kid with a big dial to physically move the antenna, sometimes depending on your setup, actually on the roof,
right,
to be able to get in the channel that you wanted. I'm hoping it's a lot more seamless than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they first started describing this, I thought he was going to tell me that it figured out which of the seven profiles was best for each channel. And that there would then be an app that would allow you to pick different profiles for each channel. It's not quite that smart. Maybe that'll be the Smartena Plus Plus. No, right now it's one profile for everything. And if that profile doesn't work for the channel you want to watch, then you got to get up and push the buttons. But it's still better than most flat antennas. And this is going to be $89. I asked for range. Range is always a tricky thing with antennas. I think he was saying 70-ish miles, but that's always up in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard to know. It depends on your area and so many different things. All right, we have one still big product to talk about, or product line. But before we do that, I have to joke a little bit. Everywhere we go, we ask people if we're talking about smart products or connected products, even TVs and AV systems and things like that. Now, the question is, are they connected and what do they connect to? Because nowadays, everyone's controlling stuff by voice assistants and what have you. So you were asking everybody we talked to, and I almost feel like you were just trolling them at some point, but you were asking, how about Cortana? Are you going to be integrating with Cortana? How did you do there in your quest for Cortana integration?
Oh, you mean Cortina?
There was another pronunciation today from someone that was also nothing like Cortana.
Yeah, not well at all. We got one or two vendors that said, it's on our roadmap. It's something we're thinking about, but it's not at the top of the list. We got a bunch of people that just said, no, we're not looking into that. And then there were a couple that had never heard of it at all.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised by that. I don't think that the marketing machine at Microsoft has yet figured out how to promote Cortana. Now, just last week, the Cortana-powered thermostat that Johnson Controls had announced is became available basically for order.
And well, sort of. There's a pre-order page, but it's still just put your email address in and we'll let you know when it's actually available for pre-order.
Geez. Okay. Well, and then, of course, we've had the Cortana speaker that we just talked about in the last episode. You did a review about that.
Mm-hmm. Which is live now, the Harman Kardon Invoke.
Microsoft this week had a blog post about how excited they are with all of the upcoming partnerships they have with vendors that are using and embedding Cortana or using Cortana as a control mechanism. And that's good to know, but that kind of comes on the eve of, and I have to imagine might even be a response to the noise that Microsoft has kind of de-emphasized this. So I wonder, I don't know what to believe right now.
Yeah, it's tough because, Microsoft is telling us that there's going to be all sorts of stuff that's going to come out this year. But in terms of hardware devices like speakers and things similar to the Invoke, there's only one that we know is in development, and that's from HP. Who knows when it's actually going to come out? I really think that both Google and Amazon have shown that if you really want success, you also need the super cheap little mini speakers and microphones like the Echo Dot and the Google Home Mini. And we don't see anything like that being announced. And we're at the event of the year where companies announce the things that they're working on for the year, and no one seems to be doing that.
Yeah.
In terms of, at least for Cortana.
We did see one display with a Cortana logo, but I almost got the feeling that they were just throwing all the logos on the wall.
Yeah.
Literally.
And it was, if I remember correctly, it was a company we had never heard of before that probably doesn't even make stuff in the US.
That is entirely possible.
So we'll continue to keep an eye on Cortana, but man, it is not looking good for her right now, especially when Google Assistant and Alexa are everywhere, absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
Sorry for saying the word.
Hey, apologize to them.
Right. All right. One more product to talk about before we get out of here. Axim. We went and met with the team from Axim to check out all of their new stuff. They've got the Axim Link, of course, the little puck-shaped device that plugs just one single connection, one USB connection straight into your Windows 10 PC or an Xbox One, and then works essentially as your single device audio video receiver, and then sends all of that audio goodness wirelessly to your WiSA powered speakers, ideally speakers made by Axum, because they now sell three lines of speakers. They have a new entry level series called the LX line. There's the XM line, which was their first foray into this. This now is their middle of the road line. And then they're also recently announced high end series is the WM speakers. They look nice. The sub is even bigger. It's a 12-inch subwoofer. It looks pretty. I can't really vouch for sound in any of this because, dude, you can't. Like, unless a company has a sealed booth somewhere or they're in a suite, there's no way you're going to get a decent demonstration of how speakers sound when you're at CES. So right. I didn't even try there. They were also talking about the 4K Q Media Center. This is the more traditional, somewhat more traditional AV receiver that they make that has six HDMI inputs in it. They're all 4K. They all support HDR. And then they also made some other enhancements to it that weren't in their initial announcements. I bugged them about the remote. I really, really disliked the remote with the original Axum Q. It was based on Bluetooth and the battery life was miserable. Like, I was changing batteries every couple of months on that thing. The connection was sometimes flaky. It was sometimes laggy. They've hopefully rectified that. They've now made the Bluetooth in the remote be Bluetooth LE. So it should definitely get far better battery life.
Right.
Far better battery life. And then they've also put a dedicated Bluetooth chip into the receiver, so that it's not sharing, you know, bandwidth constraints with other parts of the processor and stuff. So it should be less laggy, should be more responsive, better battery life. So all that's good. If you hate the everybody hates remotes. So everyone's always going to find something they like or dislike about a remote. The rest of the remote hasn't really changed. So that all looks pretty good. And they're targeting a Q3 release for the Axum Link and the LX line of speakers. They're also planning to do a bundle of the Link with a 2.1 arrangement, and then you can just add more speakers on as you like, or you can do a full 5.1 or 7.1 setup. Now, they wouldn't talk super detailed about pricing, but they did say that they think a 5.1 arrangement of LX speakers with the Link would be less than $1,000. So that seems like pretty decent pricing for what it is. It's certainly far less than some of their other lines. So that all looks good. And then if you've been interested in that 4K Q or the WM speakers, all of those pre-orders are shipping now.
And it's also worth mentioning, I think we brought this up when it was initially announced, but that 4K Q is a CES Innovation Award winner.
Oh, yeah. We should. we saw that tonight in the Innovation Award area of the Venetian. Yeah.
So yeah,
it's impressive.
Yeah. Good stuff. So, you know, it was a good year, I think. I think we've seen a lot of good stuff. I'm a little bit more excited about the things that we saw this year than in the past few. And I will obviously be having an episode of Home On coming up where we cover what's some of the more smart home oriented and connected home products that we saw here. But all in all, I think it's been a good year.
Yeah, it has been a pretty good year. I mean, nothing super revolutionary this year.
No.
But most of the steps that we're seeing are good steps. I was glad to see that in terms of display technology, that vendors weren't trying to prematurely rush into 8K, especially right. since 8K makes no sense in the home space. It never will.
Well, it will in the custom install space, but it will not in your direct-to-consumer residential. Right. That's just... I just don't see that happening, certainly in the near term, until or unless we get to the point where we have like wall-sized televisions.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Right. All right. Well, that's going to do it for our podcast for this week. We've got a lot more coverage on the website, so I hope you've been following along over there at thedigitalmediazone.com. We're also tweeting a ton. You can find Richard on Twitter. He's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. Richard already mentioned that there'll be an episode of Home On coming soon where we recap the latest smart home stuff, but you also released a new episode this week.
Right before CES, literally the day before CES events started, I released the episode that I recorded with CNET's Megan Woolerton, who I haven't even met before. And it was funny because less than 24 hours after I posted the episode, we met in person at the in line, basically, for the first press event. So that was cool getting a chance to see her and the other folks from CNET. But yeah, it was a fun show. We covered a lot of news, and then we talked a little bit about what we expected to see at CES this year, but a lot of it ended up being what we hoped to see this year at CES. And, you know, some of it was right.
All right. And Story Players is on its break between seasons right now. That will be back soon. And then we normally, when we're not in a hotel in Vegas, record the show live. You can catch that on our normal nights, Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern for that show where we record using Mixer. But that's going to do it for episode 435. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And this has been Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.